Chapter 49. If only my car had had any brakes, I would certainly have enjoyed looking down on Wharton Village from the high moor. The old stone houses, straggling unevenly along the near bank of the river, made a pleasant splash of grey on the green floor of the valley, and the little gardens with their clipped lawns gave a touch of softness to the bare, rising sweep of the fellside on the other side of the dale. But the whole scene was clouded by the thought that I had to get down that road with its 1-in-4 gradient and those two villainous S-bends. It was like a malevolent snake calling almost headlong from where I sat, and as I said, I had no brakes. Of course, the vehicle had originally been fitted with the means of bringing it to a halt, and during most of the year I had ridden in it, a violent pressure on the pedal would have the desired effect, even though it caused a certain amount of veering about on the road. But lately, the response had been growing weaker, and now it was nil. During the gradual deterioration, I had brought the matter up with Siegfried now and then, and he'd expressed sympathy and concern.
"Well, that won't do at all, James. I'll have a word with Hammond about it. Leave it to me."
And then, a few days later, when I made a further appeal,
"Oh, Lord, yes. I'd be mean to fix it up with Hammond. Don't worry, James. I'll see to it."
Finally, I had to tell him that when I put my foot on the pedal, there was nothing at all, and the only way I had of stopping the car was to crash it into bottom gear.
"Oh, God, bad luck, James. Must be a nuisance for you. But never mind, I'll arrange everything."
Sometime later, I asked Mr. Hammond down at the garage if he'd heard anything from Siegfried, but he hadn't. The motorman did, however, hop into the car and drive it slowly down the street. He came to a jerking, shuddering halt about 50 yards away, and then got out. He made no attempt to back up, but walked thoughtfully towards me. Normally an imperturbable man, he had gone rather pale, and looked at me wonderingly.
"And you mean to tell me, lad, that you do all your rounds in that car?"
"Well, yes, I do."
"You ought to have a medal, then. I dursn't drive across Market Place in that bloody thing."
There wasn't much I could do. The car was Siegfried's property, and I'd have to await his pleasure. Of course, I had had experience of this sort of thing before, in the shape of the movable passenger seat he had in his own vehicle when I first came to Derby. He never seemed to notice when I went over backwards every time I sat in it, and I don't suppose he ever would have done anything about it but for an incident one market day when he noticed an old lady with a large basket of vegetables walking into Derby and courteously offered her a lift.
Poor old girl's feet went straight up in the air, and she just disappeared into the back. Had a hell of a job getting her out. Thought we'd have to get a block and tackle. Cabbages and cauliflowers rolling all over the place.
I looked again down the steep track. The sensible thing, of course, would be to go back into Derby and take the low road into Wharton. No danger that way. But it meant a round trip of nearly 10 miles. And I could actually see the small holding I wanted to visit just 1,000 feet below. The calf with joint ill was in that shed with the green door. In fact, there was old Mr. Robinson coming out of the house now, and pottering across the yard with a bucket. I could almost reach out and touch him. I thought, not for the first time, that if you had to drive a car with no brakes, one of the last places in England you'd want to be was the Yorkshire Dales. Even on the flat it was bad enough. But I got used to it after a week or two and often forgot all about it. As when one day I was busy with a cow and the farmer jumped into my car to move it so that one of his men could get past with a tractor. I never said a word as the unsuspecting man backed round quickly and confidently and hit the wall of the barn with a sickening crash. With typical Yorkshire understatement, all he said was,
"Your brakes aren't our savage, mister."
Anyway, I had to make up my mind. Was it to be back to Derby or straight over the top? It had become a common situation, and every day I had the experience of sitting wrestling with myself on the edge of a hill with my heart thumping as it was now. There must have been scores of these unwitnessed dramas played out in the green silence of the fells. At last, I started the engine and did what I always did, took the quick way down. But this hill really was a beauty. A notorious road even in this country, and as I nosed gingerly onto it, the whole world seemed to drop away from me. With the gear lever in bottom and my hand jammed against it, I headed, dry-mouthed, down the strip of tarmac, which now looked to be almost vertical. It is surprising what speed you can attain in bottom gear if you have nothing else to hold you back, and as the first bend rushed up at me, the little engine started a rising scream of protest.